Thanks very much, Josh. Good morning, everybody, and you're very welcome. I'm surprised to see so many here in between our two big Christmas services, the carol service and the service tomorrow on Christmas Day. Just by way of information, our collection last Sunday raised 1,500 for the Capuchins, and the collection today and the collection tomorrow will both go into that, be added to that, and be sent across to the Capuchins. So thanks very much to everybody. And also our sale of work towards the replacement of our lights raised 1,400 euros. So that in and around. So that was a much welcome event. Anyway, I want to thank Bridget, if you're listening in, Bridget, for allowing me to use the pulpit again this Christmas, this pre-Christmas Sunday address. It's become a bit of a tradition. I first did it 10 years ago for James, my son, on his 18th birthday. You're getting on a bit, Jim. He's home from Barcelona for this, flew in especially for it. And so this is your Christmas present. As usual, it's a mix of some Dublin history, some history of the congregation, all hung very loosely around a Christmas theme. It's actually more of a tour of Dublin than an address. So anybody who's coming, has arrived in today or listening in today in the hope of discovering the mystery of Christmas, that's tomorrow. Gavin is on tomorrow and he'll be explaining everything. Today's Dubliners would rightly consider the centre of town to run along a spine stretching from about outside our door, really, at Stephen's Green, running along Grafton Street, down around Trinity College, Westmoreland Street, O'Connell Street, and up to Parnell Square, and just in off that. However, for most of the city's history, the centre of town was further west, in the streets that converge in the area around Christchurch Cathedral. That area was the centre of commerce and civic administration, containing markets, guild halls, and the law courts, which were actually in Christchurch Cathedral. Apart from Christchurch Cathedral and St. Aldwyn's Church, there is very little physical trace of the medieval city of Dublin, but the history of the area lives on in many of the street names. A lot of the streets bear the names of the saints associated with the parish churches. Inside the old city walls, there's Werbrook Street, Nicholas Street, John's Lane, Michael's Hill, and Aldwyn's Terrace. And just outside the old walls, Patrick Street, Bride Street, Dame Street, and more. Other streets bear the names of physical features. High Street, which was the highest street in the city. Castle Street, which ran from Christchurch down to Dublin Castle. And New Row, which was a new row of houses built just outside the western city walls. There are other more colourful and evocative names that remind us of the activities that were associated with particular streets. Wine Tavern Street, where all the wine taverns were. Cook Street, where the cooks operated from, and Cutpurse Row, where the muggers operated from. Of the four original Dublin congregations that the Stephen's Green congregation descends from, two were located close to Christ Church. The New Row congregation had a meeting house just outside the city walls in that new row of buildings that ran from Thomas Street down towards the river. The other congregation met in a house called the Magazine in Wine Tavern Street for a few years before moving to a newly built meeting house in Cook Street in 1667, where it remained for 120 years. The communion silver belonging to that congregation that was gifted to the Cook Street congregation by Reverend Thomas Harrison in 1687 is still in our ownership and is currently on loan to the National Museum. Another street that still bears an evocative name is Fishamble Street. For hundreds of years, fish brought in up the Liffey from Dublin Bay was offloaded at a quay at the bottom of the street and brought up to be sold on stalls or shambles in the open-air market on the street. Fishamble Street has a significance in the history of this congregation. Joseph Damer, a member of the New Row congregation, operated a banking business in the London Tavern, an inn which was situated in Fishamble Street. Damer, who was a very wealthy man, was by reputation a miser. But we know that he was actually a very generous philanthropist. On his death in 1719, he left a substantial sum to the New Road congregation to build a new meeting house, a widow's almshouse, and a school. The new meeting house was opened in 1728 in Eustace Street in Temple Bar, an area that was then developing as the new Docklands, with the girls' school and the boys' school operating closely by. Damer's name and his benevolence live on to the present day in this congregation through the Eustace Street Meeting House Fund, the Damer School Fund, and the Damer Hall, where we'll go for coffee after the service. But the street where Damer conducted his money-lending business has a significance that goes far beyond the history of this congregation. For, as we all know, Frederick Handel's great choral work, Messiah, was first performed in Fishamble Street on the 13th of April, 1742. Messiah has been described as a reflection on the life of Jesus, but although the Nativity forms only one section of the oratorio, it has become associated with Christmas, or to be more precise, the weeks of Advent leading up to Christmas. The late Jonathan Byron was a historian of distinction. A Dubliner, he wrote not only the history of Dublin, but even more so of the history of Ulster and Belfast, where he lived since the 1960s. In addition to being a historian, Jonathan Byron was a very good storyteller. His delightful book, Hallelujah, which was published in 2015, paints a wonderful description of Dublin in the mid-18th century and leads the reader through the story of how Handel's Messiah came to be performed in Dublin. For this avid collector of publications about Dublin, Hallelujah ranks as one of the best histories of the city that I've ever read. Jonathan Byron's name rang a bell with me at the time, and for some reason I felt that I had met him. It was only after his death that I learned that he was a member of All Souls, our sister church in his adopted city of Belfast, and that his book, Hallelujah, was launched in that church. When Handel arrived in Dublin in November 1741, he was already, in today's terms, a megastar. He had been invited to come across from London by the then Lord Lieutenant, the Duke of Devonshire, for the purpose of performing six concerts between December 1741 and February 1742. The fish markets had long since moved across the Liffey, where they still are today, and Fishamble Street had become a fashionable location containing several concert venues. The venue for Handel's concerts was the newly opened Great Music Hall, which had been built to accommodate concerts for the benefit of the Charitable and Musical Society for the Release of Imprisoned Debtors, a charity that had many calls upon its resources. It was agreed that one of the concerts would be performed for the benefit of that charity. The concerts were so popular with Dublin audiences that a second run of performances was put on. The composition of Messiah hadn't yet been completed, and it wasn't included in these performances. But Handel was sufficiently impressed by the reaction of the Dublin audiences to his concerts that he decided to complete the composition and give it its premiere in Fishamble Street. Handel received permission to use the choir of Christ Church Cathedral, and also, after some resistance by Dean Jonathan Swift, the choir of St. Patrick's Cathedral. A preview of the concert in the Dublin Newsletter described the oratorio as far surpassing anything of that nature which has been performed in this or any kingdom. To conserve space for the anticipated large audience at the first performance of Messiah, ladies were asked not to wear hoops in their dresses, and gentlemen were requested to remove their swords before entry. The performance was a huge success at every level. The performance of one of the soloists so impressed Reverend Patrick Delaney that he leapt to his feet and cried, "Woman, for this be all thy sins forgiven thee." Reverend Delaney was the husband of the more famous Mary Delaney, the artist and famous diarist. They spelled Delaney the same way as me, as I say, correctly. So they're obviously relations. The 400 pound in takings were split three ways and distributed to Mercer's Hospital, which was just around the corner, and the Charitable Infirmary, which was the hospital in Jervis Street, and to the fund to relieve prisoners' debts. The donation to the latter secured the release of 142 indebted prisoners. Now a seasonal favourite, and over 280 years since it was first performed at Fishamble Street in Dublin, Messiah is performed by choirs every year in the month of December in cities and towns across the world. History doesn't record what the different groups of 18th century Dublin dissenters thought of all the fuss about Messiah being performed in the city. But if they lived up to the reputation of their 17th century Puritan ancestors, it is likely that they would not have approved. At our carol service last week, Dirren read a piece by Bill that referenced Puritans and their less than festive attitude towards Christmas. And it wasn't just Christmas. Puritans lived simple, hard-working lives from Monday to Saturday. But Sunday doesn't seem to have been a barrel of laughs either. Quite simply, the Puritans took the spoken word very seriously and didn't welcome anything in church that might distract from listening to it. Their buildings were simple, their sermons were long and wordy, and their singing was confined to Psalms. At this point, it should be noted that this St. Stephen's Green congregation is the direct descendant of the very first congregation of Puritans in Dublin. And the singing of Psalms was still a central feature of our services here, right up to, I think, the late 1990s. Dennis would tell me. But by 1742, attitudes had relaxed and outlooks had evolved. The majority of the population of Dublin was Protestant, but their churches had long since been reclaimed from the Puritans and restored to Anglicanism with all its pomp and ceremony. However, the estimated 4,000 Protestant dissenters in Dublin made up about 7 or 8% of the population and were still a significant and important group. You think that would be about 40,000 dissenters today. History tells us that the dissenters were by no means a dull group. A few years ago, the Royal Irish Academy produced a book to accompany the republication of Rock's 1756 map of Dublin. Each section of the book zooms in on a selected area of the map and provides a commentary on the details shown in that area. One of the selected areas is in behind Angel Street, between Whitefriars Street, Bishop Street and Peter Street, or to Dubliners, between Jacobs and the old Adelaide Hospital. The book section is titled A Protestant Suburb. It clearly identifies the buildings of the area, including the Church of Ireland, Parish Church of St. Peter's, our original meeting house on Wood Street, and the meeting houses of the Moravians on Bishop Street and the French Huguenots on Peter Street. Nowadays, when we speak in this congregation of Wood Street, it is usually in connection with Reverend Thomas Emlyn, the man who was famously imprisoned for blasphemy, in other words, for saying he was a Unitarian. However, if online archives are anything to go by, it would appear that during his ministry, the name of his co-pastor, the older Reverend Joseph Boyes, that's spelled B-O-Y-S-E, it could be Boyce, but we'll say Boyes, was much better known in Dublin than Emlyn. Boyce's son, Samuel, was also quite well known, but not always for the best of reasons. He was a poet, and like most artists, he was impoverished. It is written that he all but managed to impoverish his father too. Samuel achieved some notoriety for submitting his own death notice for publication with the plea for readers to send donations to his widow. And then he repeated the same exercise a few weeks later. Boys probably got his aptitude for writing verse from his father. There are lots of written works by Reverend Joseph Boyes available in online archives. Eulogies, exchanges of views with the bishop, and his hymn books. The very successful sacramental hymns of 1693 and the more modestly successful family hymns of 1701. 50 years on, the Puritans of 1640s had obviously lightened up a bit, as his intro to one of the hymn books, Boys described the delightful duty of singing as having the genuine tendency, even above the other duties, to engage the people's attention, to quicken their devout affections, to raise and vent their spiritual joys, and give them some relish of the inward pleasure of serious religion. Did his hymn books include any Christmas carols? I don't know, but there is a Christmas carol that has a connection with this area. The 1756 map also shows another building that was used for religious purposes. The Methodists had recently opened a new hall on White Friar Street within a few yards of the Wood Street Meeting House. And when I say within a few yards, I mean as close as the tram line outside. Strictly speaking, the Methodists weren't dissenters. They were more of a religious revival group within the established church. The two people most closely associated with Methodism, the brothers John and Charles Wesley, were ordained Anglican ministers, and there is a memorial to John Wesley in St. Patrick's Cathedral, where he assisted in the celebration of a service. The Wesleys, more so John, made many visits to Dublin and left interesting accounts of their visits here. Interestingly, when the Methodists of Whitefriar Street built a new place of worship, they built it just around the corner from us here, on the south side of St. Stephen's Green. A few years later, this congregation would build its own church on St. Stephen's Green, and so the two congregations became neighbours again for a further 100 years. The Wesley name lives on in Dublin through Wesley College, and I'm told a disco, and in Wesley Road in Rathgar. For many years, I delivered the post in Rathgar, and there were 25 little houses I'm very fond of on Wesley Road in Rathgar. So Christmas Eve, about this time Christmas Eve, I would have been delivering the last of the Christmas post and the last of the greetings on that day. The Wesley name also lives on in our hymn book, but only just. Charles Wesley was a prolific writer of hymns, and our old hymn book, sadly no longer used in my opinion, contains 11 Wesley hymns, 9 by Charles and 2 by John. Our current hymn book contains only one, number 268, an Easter hymn by Charles. Strangely, Charles's best known composition, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, is not in our current hymn book. However, we sing it almost every year, and I'm sure we'll sing it again tomorrow. If we do, we'll be singing it to the standard tune, the Mendelssohn one that we all know so well, and we'll hear around the streets today as you go off to finish the shopping. But there is another version. This afternoon, I'll be in St. Patrick's Cathedral for the carol service. I don't know yet what the full selection of carols will be, but I know that the service will commence with the singing of Once in Royal David City, a hymn written by the Dublin-born Irish woman, C.F. Alexander, and that it will be brought to close by the sounds of kettle drums and trumpets, joined by the congregation singing Wesley's Hark the Herald Angels Sing to the melody See the Conquering Heroes Come, which was written by none other than Frederick Handel of Messiah fame and Fishamble Street fame. What more could a Dubliner ask for? Happy Christmas, everyone.